the U.S. Congress, for all its problems and concerns, that you've spent a lot of time in D.C., you know, the intelligence committees and in some cases the armed services committees work pretty well, and including the intelligence committees still work pretty well across party lines. And they get briefed all the time on things that the general public doesn't know. And as best as I can tell, they handle those in a thoughtful, country first rather than party first manner. So I actually think that system is working decently well.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Artificial intelligence, AI, stands at the forefront of technological evolution, with experts predicting that it could add trillions of dollars to our GDP, but it could also negatively impact our workforce and national security. So how do we regulate it without stifling innovation? Our podcast features insights from various perspectives. We've had industry leaders, government officials, and leaders of advocacy groups. Together, they address pivotal questions that are needed to create practical legislation. I'm very excited to have Anya Manuel with us today. Anya is the executive director of the Aspen Strategy Group and the Aspen Security Forum. She's also the co-founder and partner at Rice, Hadley, Gates & Manuel, LLC. I invited her on this show as it is very important to get different perspectives towards framing AI legislation. And we also wanted to get a perspective from many different national security experts. Welcome, Anya. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the Regulating AI podcast.
Thank you, Sanjay. I'm so happy to be here and to be reconnected with you.
Same here, Anya. It's been a long, long time. Anya, given your background and how national security is so very, very relevant, provide some areas or examples where AI, artificial intelligence, has been leveraged for national security.
Absolutely. Let me talk about the two most relevant ones. And that is, of course, in the drone space, in autonomous weapons, and in intelligence gathering. You're seeing already the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, rapid advancement in technologies. On the one hand, it's a 20th century contest looking like World War I. On the other hand, it is the first 21st century contest. And you're seeing the following things. Sensors everywhere. Totally ubiquitous. The meshing of civilian and military sensors. Decentralized command and control. Drones of all sizes and shapes. And then on the intelligence side, automating intelligence, surveillance, automating how you analyze intelligence. And so that's all happening right now. And you see the innovations happening really quickly. And frankly, the big militaries like the US, UK, and others kind of looking at it and struggling to catch up.
Well, I think you make a very relevant point. In fact, I think drone technology has become like a nationalistic issue. And Turkey is now exporting drones, and you have Iran and all these other places, and even what we are seeing recently with drones. And as you said, that's been the nature of the use of AI. So what are the potential risks for the unregulated use of AI in the context of national security? And how can legislation mitigate these risks, Anya?
That's a really good point. Let me just say one thing on how the U.S. is trying to catch up. We have actually, under the leadership of Kath Hicks and Lloyd Austin, created two important programs in the last year that I really hope get the funding they deserve from Congress. One is Replicator, which aims to field thousands of autonomous systems quickly. This is really fast moving for the Defense Department. They're not always that fast moving. And another one is called Task Force Lima, which aims to integrate generative AI across different Department of Defense processes. So that's on the how it's actually being used side. How it can be dangerous side, but this list is long, and you're right to raise it. And the piece of AI that I would say I worry about most is how AI intersects with other technologies in possibly dangerous ways. So on cyber, which we can spend more time on later, the big worry is, of course, that artificial intelligence will now write the malicious code itself. And that's ChatGPT, that's other large language models. You're also, of course, seeing cyber defenses be strengthened through AI, but this is going to continue to be a contest. So first danger is cyber. Two, autonomous weapons, we've already talked about a little bit. Three, bio. This is particularly worrying. In one recent alarming experiment, researchers in Switzerland asked an algorithm to create new, more toxic substances. It found 40,000 new ones within a couple of minutes, some of them worse than VX nerve gas and others. So the opportunity for non-state actors to have access to really lethal bio agents is extreme. And then, of course, nuclear weapons, people have talked about a lot. And there the concern is really about control of nuclear weapons. So now you have proliferation of drones, satellites, other sensors that I talked about. There's a possibility that this threatens kind of the long-term slow buildup that we've had of careful monitoring of when is a nuclear weapon launched, what is safety, and this could upend all of that. So I know there's a group of experts working very hard on command and control of nuclear weapons in this new age.
You've listed some pretty scary stuff from drones to cyber to bio to nuclear. Let me just mention something. The nature of AI technology is changing dramatically. You had large language models come out. Then you had multimodal, where it's visions, sound, etc. Then you have now agents, intelligent agents that can basically perform tasks on its own. So the dynamic nature is incredible. And people are saying that we are not too far from seeing AGI, which is artificial general intelligence, where it's the same or even higher than human intelligence. So given the dynamic nature, Anya, how can legislation remain agile and responsive to some of these national security challenges?
That is the key question. And you listed some of the ways in which AI is already upending every industry and progressing really faster than anybody expected. I'm not going to comment on when we're going to have AGI. I live out here in Silicon Valley. There's a really heated repeat on it. So how do regulators catch up? They don't. I would tell you, I am really hopeful that unlike in social media and the internet space, where basically all of the technologies were well out of the bag before anyone started thinking about regulating some thoughtful regulations, and we still don't have them. In AI, you have governments around the world taking a thoughtful, moderate approach. So let me just say what I mean by that. In the US, we have two processes that I'm sure you know in depth. One is the executive order that Biden put out last year. It's a great start. It doesn't go too far. It's generally pretty friendly towards innovation, but it says, here are the ways we're going to be careful, especially when we're rolling out AI across the US government. Legislation, harder to do, but I actually think a process that Senator Schumer started last summer, I was actually at the launch event, with these meetings with different stakeholders in this debate, then thinking about how do we regulate, that's the right approach. We haven't seen regulation yet. This is a crazy year for us. It's an election year, so hard to see anything landmark like that getting done. But we'll have the basis, and you see, unlike in previous tech innovations, you see legislators educating themselves about it. And then, of course, you have the big international efforts, which we can get to in a minute.
So you raised a couple of very important points. One is the executive order, which, as you said, covered vast ground. And there are over 100 or 130 bills in Congress trying to do something that tells you that members of Congress are aware. Senator Schumer has had these listening sessions. And then you have this EU AI Act. And the fear is, just like with GDPR, that maybe the EU AI Act will be something that global companies will have to live with. But generally, if you notice in both these efforts, Anya, the national security is kind of put aside. So how can legislation strike a balance between, we want to keep innovation going, you're in Silicon Valley, so innovation is what drives us, but in the national security sector, and also, but prevent misuse or unintended consequences of something like this?
Yeah. Wow. You got right at the heart of the issue. And I haven't heard anyone, and I work with experts in this all the time, I haven't heard anyone give a good answer to this, which is a little terrifying. I mean, as you know, the landmark AI Act really talks about different risk levels of different models, and certain models at higher risk have to be more transparent about what they're doing, including in the realm of national security and intelligence gathering, but also Are they discriminating against people? So the hard thing is AI is such a multi-purpose technology. It's a little bit like the steam engine or electricity. It's going to apply to everything. How do you regulate it? And so I actually think the U.S. executive order did a pretty good job because it looks at it by industry and kind of by U.S. agency that has to deal with these issues. And they're saying, look, it isn't going to be a one-size-fits-all approach. And maybe some of the laws we already have in place should just be specifically made to apply to AI. So my frightening example I gave about AI creating new bioagents that could kill us all. But that's illegal. It should be illegal whether the AI is doing it or whether a human is doing it in the lab. The question is, how do you catch it? How do you catch it quick enough? And how do you prosecute it? And who do you hold responsible? Because, of course, as a lawyer, the folks creating the generative AI models don't want to be responsible for everything that comes out of there, but they should probably have some responsibility if their model is being used for nefarious uses.
Anya, do you think there is an opportunity for some kind of global cooperation, even though, you know, UK is doing its whole safety thing, EU's got its own AI Act, the US is working towards, even though you and I know it's not going to happen this year because of the elections, but is there opportunity for a global cooperation on something so important?
Yeah, and I've got to tell you, I've been really heartened by the international efforts that are already happening. So the UK AI Safety Summit was a really excellent start. And I think Prime Minister Sunak and Henry Dassault and his team who put that together deserve a lot of credit because they kind of kicked off the bidding, if you will. And this is going to be a patchwork. I can't imagine that there's going to be one overarching law. But you're starting to have the key actors converge around at least a moderate set of criteria. Look, it's going to be harder to get the autocracies on board. We're always going to have more in common with how we want to think about regulating AI between us and Europe and other like-minded countries than we will probably with China, Russia, et cetera. But the Chinese were invited to the UK AI Safety Summit. That was great. The G7 leaders put out this Hiroshima process for code of conduct of advanced AI systems. Look, I'm listing all of these. I think your listeners don't need to know the details of them. Just know that right now, they're a little lowest common denominator, right? They're not perfect yet, but it means that the world is watching and careful. And what's happening in China, you're also seeing a patchwork of AI regulations because the Chinese are trying to figure it out, just like we're trying to figure it out. Look, they'll come out somewhere different on surveillance than we will. We have much in common with them on that. But on certain dangers like bio, like nuclear, like some of the things I mentioned, maybe like discrimination and others, we might have areas of confluence. And so I would tell you one other promising thing. It's in its infancy, but when Biden and Xi met in November here in San Francisco, they agreed to start an AI dialogue between the two governments. That cannot come soon enough.
You talked about discrimination, so let me pick up on that point. Are there specific ethical considerations that are unique to AI applications in the national security domain, Anya?
Yes, when you're talking about discrimination as writ large, if you define national security as policing, of course, huge discrimination issues. How do you use surveillance? Where do you use surveillance? How do you decide who is going to be targeted for greater review, whether it's at an airport or being stopped by the police? There are all sorts of ways in which AI can go wrong here. When I say national security, I more come from the background of the Defense Department, the intelligence agencies. Look, there's the surveillance certainty, sure, but we're talking more about how AI can be used to enable and in some case create new classes of weapons.
With your background, how receptive do you think are national security agencies to have some kind of a regulatory framework around AI?
Hugely receptive, because what nobody wants here is an arms race that gets totally out of control, right? So we already see that in the cyber realm. It's been very hard to get international agreements on cyber restrictions, even on the basics. Do the Geneva Conventions of War apply to cyber? They certainly should. But frankly, you saw, I think there was a newspaper report this morning about Chinese cyber criminals possibly targeting our infrastructure in the US. Imagine if that were a kinetic attack. We'd be at war. But somehow in cyber, you can escalate pretty high, and the escalation ladder is so easy that everyone's tempted to use cyber because attribution is so hard. So it's been really hard to get to agreement there. I hope we don't get there with AI. It's too dangerous. We need rules of the road.
Do you think public-private collaboration is possible in addressing some of these national security considerations relating to AI?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's already happening. I live out here in Silicon Valley. 5 or 6 years ago, most Silicon Valley firms had no interest at all in working with the U.S. government. And it was partly their kind of the background they came from. It was also maybe the Trump administration was anathema to a lot of the lefties out here. But now you don't hear that so much. You have a lot of young companies, including in the AI space, deeply integrated with the U.S. national security community, wanting to be patriotic, wanting to think through carefully how their AI can be used for good or not. I mean, just look at the difference. The big internet companies were all profit all the time. Both OpenAI and Anthropic, while they have some governance problems, they're made to have a multi-stakeholder beneficiaries, not just their shareholders. So they already realize that what they're playing with is so potentially dangerous as well as beneficial that they need to be more thoughtful and more keep the government in the loop more than you would with other technologies.
Yeah, I think some of it is the Palantir effect too. I mean, there's so many Palantir exiles who started their companies going back into the DoD world. But you're right. The employees used to reward when their companies used to work with the Department of Defense, but that's changed dramatically. Anya, what are there specific criteria or standards that should be established in legislation to assess the reliability and safety of AI technologies in terms of national security?
It's a good point. Yes, there should, but I'm not the right person to ask those details. We'll probably want to talk with someone who's really technical on those. It would be enormously helpful going back to the international conversations about this. And I don't get the sense that those are happening at a level of detail yet that we should. There should be some sort of agreement that there needs to be a human in the loop on the most dangerous kill decisions, whether that's nuclear weapons. Of course, there should be a human in the loop making a decision about whether to launch a nuclear weapon. I don't want to terrify everyone who's listening to this podcast. But also with certain autonomous weapons, as they get more and more dangerous, it needs to be very clear for militaries of all sides that even though it might be, for example, much more efficient and faster and more effective to have an AI fly jets, that sometimes you want those decisions about when missiles are shot actually to be made by a human. So those are really important dialogues that are just in their infancy. And I hope this year will be an opportunity to continue them.
Since you've talked about drones and autonomous weapons, how might AI legislation address concerns relating to the potential for, you know, some of these weapons? And are there international agreements or regulations that should be considered?
Looking to make the most out of AI advancements and innovation? Visit regulatingai.org to learn more about how best to optimize the use and integration of AI, and sign up for the Regulating AI newsletter to keep up to date with the latest in AI governance and regulation.
Yeah, I may not know about all of them, but as far as I know, there is not individual country legislation on this. The U.S. Department of Defense has a human in the loop criteria. Always. I've had it since I think Ash Carter was Secretary of Defense. I think that still holds, that regulation. I haven't seen that enshrined in legislation anywhere around the world. I could be missing something, but it's time to start the conversations. It could be that they're happening and I just don't know about them. But if they're not, it's urgent.
How can legislators balance the need for the secrecy for national security operations with the public's right to really understand and scrutinize the use of AI technologies?
The U.S. Congress, for all its problems and concerns, you've spent a lot of time in D.C. You know, the intelligence committees and in some cases the armed services committees work pretty well, and including the intelligence committees still work pretty well across party lines. And they get briefed all the time on things that the general public doesn't know. And as best as I can tell, they handle those in a thoughtful, country first rather than party first manner. So I actually think that system is working decently well.
Can you provide some insights into how artificial intelligence legislation might impact intelligence gathering and analysis, especially in terms of privacy and civil liberties, because that's a big issue for us?
So I would again draw a distinction between intelligence gathering domestically, FBI, police departments, which of course has a whole different realm of law, as you know better than anyone, than intelligence gathering internationally. The piece that I spend most of my time on is the international, of course. And of course, there are fewer rules. We gather intelligence all the time on foreign adversaries, and we're less concerned about their civil rights than we are about our own citizens. I know there's been conversation recently about, after the various leaks, do you rein in some of those things? I don't know where they currently stand.
So in your view, when you look ahead, what potential future scenarios or advancements in AI technology do you foresee that might, you know, require some adjustments or expansion in our national security related legislation?
I think all of the ones that I mentioned, cyber is the really complex one because, as we talked about in the beginning, Sanjay, it's both such a great tool for adversaries. You don't even have to be that sophisticated to write a really malicious code that can do serious damage, including to the nation's infrastructure, to the electricity grid, to pipelines, to whatever you name it, things that would be considered really beyond the pale if they were in the kinetic sense. And you'll also step up your ability to defend attack surface management tools, et cetera. So do we need new legislation there? Maybe. Are we there yet? I don't think so, but that's the one that I worry about the most. I know that a lot of the Silicon Valley cyber firms, Palo Alto Networks and others, are thinking really carefully, not only about how their products will shift as a result of AI, but also how the regulation should shift. So it's an important area to keep watch on.
Finally, we have a large audience with members of Congress, their staff, and think tanks. Any parting words from an expert who's spent basically her career into something like this, what would you want to leave a message for them as they grapple with really truly a transformative technology of our times?
Yeah, of course, because I see it mostly from the international side. I know international negotiations are slow and painful, and they often don't feel like they're getting somewhere. Keep talking. And also, please keep talking to the Chinese in particular, the Russians also. It's really important that we just understand in more detail where the development is of AI in those countries and others. We have a lead right now, especially in Gen AI. We may not in the future. And so continuing to talk to our international allies, but also our adversaries is absolutely critical. Thanks for asking.
Talking to the Chinese and the Russians. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a
great... Doesn't mean you have to tell them everything. You don't have to let all of the IP out of the bag, but you do have to understand how they're seeing regulating it and how we're seeing regulating it. And I'll give you one example, Sanjay, that may make it seem not so quixotic. The U.S. had a huge lead after we invented the atomic bomb in 1945. 2 years later, the United States proposed at the UN a regulatory framework for nuclear weapons and nuclear power. Now, that particular one didn't go through, but it started the arms control talks that eventually led to all of the arms control agreements that happened in the 60s and 70s. So just because we're not there yet doesn't mean we shouldn't start talking.
Well, great important. Point. Great insight, Dania. Thanks so much for taking the time from your busy schedule. You're talking about some very, very important subjects as the world gets more and more complicated with everything that's going on. Thanks for being with us, Anya.
Thank you. So happy to do it. Bye, Sanjay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.